Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's September 10th, 2013. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer Seal. Joined tonight by my good buddy Sam Barbieri from Waterfront Ale House, also a Good Beer Seal co-founder. Sam, how are you, man?
Very, very good. Glad to be back here.
So great to see you. I know you got the big Brooklyn event next week.
The largest, greatest street fair in all of New York City is called the Atlantic Antic. It is one of the most diverse street fairs that you're going to find. The foods, the drinks, the beers, the crafts that are there. This is not your average Manhattan.
It's a pretty special event. All the bars, you got to sell beer on the streets.
If you're a bar on Atlantic Avenue, you're going to sell alcoholic beverages outside.
So that's a pretty. So September 29th.
There are a lot of it's a lot of craft beers.
Next Sunday.
Six Point makes a special beer. It's called the Atlantic Amber, and it's only sold by the bars on Atlantic Avenue for the street fair. It's a really, really nice fall beer, very malty, perfect beer to walk around and taste all the ethnic foods that are there.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Atlantic Antic next Sunday, and then we've also got Will Gordon. He came down from Boston. You talk about drinking the bottom shelf. We're not going to talk about Budweiser and the other things you usually write about, but
I'm
glad you came down.
No, well, I like, it's not just Budweiser. There's also like the regional lower-end beers, cheaper beers, because, you know, not every day is payday, as I like to say. So sometimes you need to save a couple bucks, drink another thing, be sunny summer day, have a couple things that are 4% alcohol you can drink a lot.
All right, and a little later, Don Russell, Joe Sixpack from Philly Beer Week, he's going to call in, and we're going to talk a little bit about Heritage Breweries and talk more about that subject. We don't talk about too often. We try to talk more about the small, you know, new craft breweries. And along that line, we've got two guys from Scotland. You can get your mics on here. You've got James Watt and Martin Dickey. They're from Brewdog in Scotland. And give them that mic, Will. And you guys have a lot to talk about, so... You know, Sam's here, and, you know, we've all had your beer, Brewdog. I know you've got a lot of cool things going on, and people don't really know that much about you. I mean, you guys are from Scotland, and now you've got a TV show coming out next week on Esquire Network. So tell us about how you got started, because, you know, when your beers first came over and made a splash, you had some really strong beers, and, you know, you were one of those first kind of craft beers from Scotland that we got. And I know a friend of mine was just up there. He said there's a lot more small craft breweries than there used to be. So tell us about how you guys got started in the beer scene and, you know.
Well, we set up in 2007 in Scotland, but before then we used to spend our time making beers at home. And back then in the UK you could get industrial beers and you could get very good examples of cask ales, but we didn't have the stylistic diversity, the kind of spectrum of styles and kind of high-octane exciting beers that you were finding in America. So we were massively inspired by what was happening in the US when we set up, and we got a small bank loan, we got some secondhand stainless steel tanks, we quit our day jobs and we started making beer. And our biggest mission when we started, and it's still our biggest mission today, is just to make other people as passionate about great craft beer as we are.
Sam, have you had a Brewdog at Waterfront Ale House?
Actually, I've had the Dogma. Excellent beer. The IPA is unbelievable. That's really, really good. And that's almost, what, 9.5 maybe?
Yeah, we've got an IPA. It's 9.2.
Yeah, and you have a really good hops in there, too.
So the Dogma, when we launched that beer's a combination of stimulants and depressants. So we've got Guarana, we've got Cola Nut, we've got Poppy, and we've got hops in there. So we actually called it Speedball in the UK, but that got banned after about a week.
I wonder Speedball. Why.
All right. Wow.
And, might sell well in the East Village.
Maybe. And Martin too. So you guys got started, but it's just telling more of the stories. I mean, making craft beer in Scotland, you know, there weren't too many. We've had Harvesting come over, but other than that, we haven't seen too many.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were one of the first companies to really push...
Excuse me.
To really push what was happening in terms of beer. I mean, we got a lot of inspiration from America. We got a lot of inspiration from some of the sour Belgian beers that were being made as well. So the only way that we could really drink beer that we wanted to was to make it ourselves. And we've been doing that ever since.
So how did you go from making beer to exporting to the States?
Well, I mean, the US for us is where the whole draft beer revolution started. Kind of kicked off with Anchor back in the mid-70s with Liberty. Then you got kind of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. So all the beers that we were so heavily inspired by came from the US. And the US is one of the best, most exciting, most diverse draft beer markets on the planet. And what we love about coming here is the understanding, appreciation, availability of great draft beer, but being also being able to meet these artistic renegade vagabonds, these kind of amazing people behind these beers. So yeah, for us, we wanted to come here, we wanted to sell our beers here, and we wanted to do the TV show here as well.
So that's the big news. You're doing a TV show, you get to travel around the country. What are some of the places that you're visiting, some of the favorite beers that you've got to try in the States?
Yeah, I mean, the premise of the show is that James and I traveled around America, going to as many of the great beer towns as possible. And then when we got to those cities, we would hang out, sort of soak up some of the culture, and then brew a beer that kind of is our interpretation of that city or area. And we brew the beer with one of our favourite brewers from those cities. So the first episode in San Diego, we brewed a beer with Greg from Stone.
Did you bring that beer? There's something from Stone here. Is this? Did you bring Stone IPA?
I thought that was yours.
I don't know. Yeah. You guys brought it in.
Did you brew at Stone, or you just took it back and worked on a recipe together?
Well, in each city, we not only want to make a beer that's inspired by that city, we want to make it in a way that's inspired by that city. So the beer in San Diego, we actually made it on the Amtrak Pacific Surfliner between San Diego and Los Angeles. The beer in San Francisco, we made it on the rooftop of Anchor in an open cool ship. In Portland, we made it in a raft made out of beer kegs floating down the Willamette River. In Philadelphia, we made it on the 4th of July in one of these Independence Day raids that you have here to celebrate. I think it's when celebrate Will Smith defeated the alien invasion.
Wow. Well, Will Gordon.
That was July 5th, not the 4th.
Will, jump on, because you know you're writing for Serious Eats. So are these the kind of beers that you would usually buy yourself?
You know, they are, because I like a nice beer. But, you know, I feel that, yeah, I'm looking forward to all you guys' stuff, what you have with it. When are we going to be able to drink one of the ones you're collaborating on, your American beers? When are those coming out?
They're not.
So they're just for the show?
They're just for the show, yeah.
You're killing me? So you need a roadie on the show?
Yep.
How do I get signed on the show then? Because I'm, you know, don't tease me. Don't tease me, boys.
We need more information. I don't usually introduce it, but your publicist here, Rachel, anything we should know about the show?
I wouldn't ask her anything. She's not very good.
But she brought the story. Rachel, jump on to tell us a few things about the show. So, because our listeners are definitely interested. It's like this kind of thing. You just pluck these guys out of Scotland. Have they ever been to America before?
Yeah, they've been to America before. They did a really great job. I think that they really did a great job of picking some amazing craft beer cities. And, you know, the episodes are hysterical. They're really entertaining. You see how they interact with some amazing brewers from around the country, their personal relationships with them, like Greg from Stone is a really great example in the first episode. And, you know, it's adventure. And then they also get to meet and introduce their opinions of craft beer to people who don't drink it all the time. They call them craft beer virgins. So they're good to talk about that.
All right. If you want to tweet us at @beer_sessions, if you're a craft beer virgin and you want to meet these two guys. Maggie.
They're also extremely handsome gentlemen.
Well, that's what
I'd like to point that out. They're
I will
very
say that
gentlemen.
On the way in, our intern Maggie did mention, she called you guys, she said, wow, check out those two college guys.
So there's a lot of nudity in the show, so Maggie's not going to be disappointed.
You know, James and Martin from Bruno. So when you guys walked in, I just didn't believe you guys were the owners. I've heard a lot of myths about this BrewDogs. I mean, it came to the stage. You had like one of the strongest beers, and we've had some at Jimmy's Number 43. You guys have even shipped casks over to America, and you made an impact really fast. So the deep question is, where'd you guys get the money to do all this to start out this way?
Well, we're actually funded quite unusually as a company. We set up the company with a £20,000 bank loan. I think £20,000 is equivalent to about $5 million. That's a little joke for any mathematicians there, and it's not. Take your time, you'll get there. I think the change rate's 1.55 at the moment, which makes 50 Cent, the famous rapper, equivalent to 37 and a half pence. Okay, I'll stop with the maths. So, yeah, we're quite unusual in terms of how we're funded as a company. We couldn't get the finance to grow our business, so we actually sold equity in our business online to the people who enjoy the beers that we make. So to date, we've had 12,000 people invest in our website. We've raised over $10 million, and it's not only given us the money to expand our company, but it's also built up this community, this culture around about what we do. It shortens the distance as much as possible between ourselves and the people who enjoy our beers. And for us, the whole draft beer thing, it's about family, it's about sharing that passion with people. So it's great that people who are passionate about the beers we make also own part of our business.
That's great. So we meet a lot of cool people. I mean, we meet Yuppie from Evil Twin and McCullough, and you know, Brian from Stillwater. There's people doing a lot of innovative, you know, ways of creating a brewery. Some of them are making beer at other people's, but so this is like crowdsourcing your money. Are these people owners of your brewery, or they're just kind of like,
yeah, no, they own an equity stake in our company, so the original investors, as well as getting lifetime discounts and invites to awesome events, have seen an increase of about 5 times of their original investment. So it's a serious financial investment, but it's a hell of a lot of fun too.
And we have the best AGMs ever.
The best what?
AGMs, like an annual general meeting.
Oh.
Because we're out.
Annual general meeting.
Because we have so many shareholders, we have to do things properly. So we have one day a year where we have the business financials. So 2,500 people turn up, and we spend about half an hour doing the serious financial stuff, and then the rest of the day is just a party.
Wow. It sounds like
it more needs more than one day.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Start on a Friday and then on a Monday.
That's a fresh, sensible thing you've said today.
Maybe you should fly me and Sam out to the next one. We'll serve you guys barbecue.
We could do a live radio cast. It would be awesome.
Yeah, we could do that.
Let's do it.
Right.
Well, we asked Stone that years ago, but we'll go to BrewDog first. Why not? We go up to Cooperstown every summer, but we'll go out there. Wow. Well, you know, one thing about the beer is that it's such a great community, and there's so many cool guys like you guys, you know, doing new things. What are the titles? You must have a title in your company. Do you have titles?
I am Captain.
I don't even have a title.
He needs a title. Again, tweet us at beer underscore session. You know, like at Lagunitas, there's a guy, his name's Beer Weasel. I think that's Ron Lindenbush. You know, you got to check out. Have you guys been to Lagunitas in Petaluma, California?
And does he have a head like a weasel, or why is he called Weasel?
I think he does.
It might be.
Like a pointy snout.
Half human, half weasel. It's kind of like you get this thing in the UK called the spider baby. It's got the body of a spider, but the mind of a baby.
And do you have a beer called Spider Baby?
No, but we're going to now.
Yeah, you should. And tell me a couple other breweries that you like in America.
Molson Coors, AB InBev. I'm just a huge fan of things that are lowest common denominator, mass market, industrial, generic. It tastes like fizzy, insipid liquid cardboard.
There's never a day that goes past when James doesn't say, "I want everything in a beer and less."
All right, well, I'll tell you, you're on the right show because we have some guys coming talking about heritage beers and cheap American beer, which we've never talked about before. So we hope to set the framework for an interesting show. You know, we've got great old school beer bar owner Sam, interesting writer from Boston, and you guys are the real craft guys, and we'll be back in a few minutes. We're going to talk about some new things on Beer Sessions Radio.
And now some Dolly Parton.
All right.
Is that your music? Stared at an unmade bed where I no longer laid. I locked the gate and it screamed.
You're listening to Poor Eyes by The Hollows on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Who can remain?
So, you like good beer? Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet.
GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today. Some would say it ain't the coldest that it's been. I ain't been this cold, and I can't remember. February comes, can't stand underground. Taste of your skin is the only sound. Train hears a sigh and my hair is bit of weeds. I scare this round my eyes and my tongue it bleeds. Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here with some cool guys. Sam Barbieri from Waterfront Ale House is talking about Atlantic Antic, the largest street festival in Brooklyn.
The largest street festival in New York City.
Wow.
Also the best street festival.
With beer outside.
Beer outside. There's about maybe 10 of us that have licenses on the street. We're all serving different beers. Hopefully, they'll all be craft beers.
So next,
we've been pushing it.
Next Sunday, September 29th.
September 29th from noon until 6 p.m.
And you've got a vested interest in craft beer. You're a longtime beer bar owner. We got James and Martin from BrewDog, also, you know, up and coming small craft brewers from Scotland. We've got a TV show coming out. And then we've got the other guys. We've got Will Gordon from Boston. And on the air, we have Don Russell, known as Joe Sixpack and part of Philly Beer Week. They're going to tell you about heritage breweries, and we're going to have a little conversation here. So, Don, are you on the air?
Yes, I am. Greetings.
Welcome to the show, man. Do you know Will Gordon? He's the wears his hoodie, Will, drinking the bottom shelf from Serious Eats in Boston.
Yeah, right for Deadspin now. But yeah, similar.
You caught me off guard. I don't have a glass in my hand.
Well, I bet you do, because we're drinking the heritage beers, and yeah. I'm sure everyone in America has one. So tell us about heritage beers and why you care about them so much when the rest of us are so into these obscure craft beers.
Well, obviously, we're talking about history here, and these breweries are what laid the groundwork for the beer we're drinking today. I mean, most of the craft brewers today, even though they're brewing sort of unusual and interesting new styles, they're all based on classic recipes for the most part. I mean, we're talking about a tradition that goes back hundreds of years, but these breweries really did pave the way for the styles that we're drinking today. And I should mention, there's some of them are still alive and brewing perfectly great beer that's equal to all the esoteric stuff that we love.
So give us a list of what you consider the heritage beers. I mean, I have a list here, but I'd like to hear it from you.
Well, I guess, we're talking basically about anybody that was open really before Prohibition and is still open. I mean, some people might define that more strictly and say breweries that opened in the 1800s that are still open. But basically, I think it's anybody that was alive and well before Prohibition and is still with us today. So that can obviously include the likes of Yingling, United States' oldest brewery, and includes even the likes of, Anheuser-Busch and Miller Brewing, Leinenkugel, Iron City. It's really probably not really still alive, but our much loved Anchor Brewing, which has been open for almost 120 years now or so, and There's so many more. We have another one here in Pennsylvania, Straub, which opened up in 1872, very local. One time called itself the smallest brewery in America. And so the list goes on. There's probably about, I think, in the vicinity of 15 to 20 breweries that sort of call themselves heritage or retro breweries.
And what's your favorite brewery out of all the heritage breweries, Don?
Well, I really like, obviously I like Anchor a whole lot. I think I'm really pleased by the fact that the brewery has held its own since Fritz Maytag sold it a couple years ago. I'm a big fan locally of Yuengling as well. And we have another one here in Pennsylvania called Lion Brewing that is goes back to 1905 that is also producing some really nice beers under the Stegmeier label. So I have a few favorites in that bunch that, interestingly, most of them are not what the Brewers Association calls true craft brewers. I disagree with that, but with their definition, but I do think they're making some decent beers.
And the great thing with Anchor Brewing specifically is that it was probably the one brewery that kickstarted the whole craft beer revolution with their Liberty Ale.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, Fritz and Anchor deserve so much credit for the beers we're drinking. I mean, they made, you know, basically the first, you know, true, you know, hoppy pale ale with Liberty. They made, you know, in my mind, the first American-made true ale-style porter or porter-style ale since the Prohibition, because most of those porters that we were drinking were more lagerish. And they're responsible also for kicking off the whole Christmas beer trend in America, too. So they get so much credit for making incredibly great beer.
You know, one thing about, you're talking about the definition of craft, I mean, I think it's a little skewed. I've been told that the number, the volume of beer that you make that defines craft beer is defined by how much beer Sam Adams is making. And it influences the whole industry. So when we think about craft, I mean, what do you guys make at BrewDog? 10,000 barrels a year? How many?
This year we'll do about 50,000.
50,000, but, you know, there's, you know, Blue Point, Omegang, you know, there's people making 20, 50, 100,000 barrels of beer, a couple hundred thousand Brooklyn Brewery. They're still small, you know, and we get this talk a lot. I don't know how you feel, Sam. I mean, I know you carry these heritage beers, and it's a definitely interesting, you know, you open it up to beer. What is beer? Well, it's like when I think craft, I think, you know, a little guy's making beer in his own neighborhood. And at some point, once everybody's exporting and shipping across the country, you know, it's a different scale. And I don't know. This is everyone's looking for ways to define what is craft beer. So I think that this is a good way to talk about it. But Will, you're on the show to talk about this in particular, so jump in and help us out. This is a big picture issue, you know?
Well, excuse me. That was professional. I'm a lager guy myself recently. And I'm from Massachusetts where there's a lot of good lagers coming out. And Narragansett, I don't know, Don, if you agree, is one of the, I consider it a heritage brewery, you know? They went away for a while, but then they've come back. And they're putting out their base lager they've been putting out for 140 years, however long it is, but they have really good seasonals and really good specialty beers, which maybe stretch the definition, so it sort of bridges the gap between heritage and craft, which, you know, I think it's nice, that, so it can bring people in. My grandfather, who drinks Narragansett, will have the Narragansett seasonal that I bring him, you know, and it'll. Yeah.
And what about Sam? I mean, because at Waterfront Ale House, you've been there. The other thing is, some of the older beer bars, and say like Mug's Ale House and Waterfront Ale House, you guys have heritage brands. You have Anchor. You know, which beers do you have that you've had for a long time that you've always carried?
We've had Anchor since it was available in New York City. I had a fight to get it, and Liberty Ale wasn't always available. We started with Steam, and then they started to get Liberty after a couple of years after we were open. And then Brooklyn, we took on at their infancy. And we've always had a Brooklyn product because I think the guys do a tremendous job. And I like that they make all their beers, their draft beers themselves. Blue Point, Six Point, they all started making all their own beers. And that's when we really got into them. But now they're to the point where most of the beer that they're selling is made by someone else. It's all contract. I mean, they're still in a craft market. Sam Adams, too. Sam Adams started making their own beers in Boston, but they just grew expectantially and had to be brewed by other people. And so, I think they're brewed in, like, four different places all over the country now. As well, Yuengling is brewed in Florida.
That's interesting irony, because I believe most of the Sam Adams is brewed in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and I want to jump in because just so you know, on this show, I don't really care too much about those other breweries, and I want to make it clear because what I like is finding the new breweries and meeting with cool people. And, you know, there's this whole world of beer business, and my uncle used to sell Anheuser-Busch and, you know, in Massachusetts. And so I'm not too interested in those arcana of it. I mean, there's a huge list here of breweries, and Don, I want you to still be on. And there's August Shell, Matt Brewing, Saranac Brewery, Straub, Yuengling, Anchor, Dundee, Iron City, Lion, Spetzel, Stevens Point, Jacob Line and Kugel, Cold Springs, Dixie. I mean, the thing is, to me, is you know, it's not macro, and I really don't like to talk about this stuff on the show, but what I really do care about is, you know, why do you guys care? Like, why do you care about Narragansett or these other brands when there's so much good small craft beer? So I'm putting you guys on the spot, but and Will in particular, because you're trying to talk about buying beer on a paycheck, which I understand, but I can go in a store and buy, you know, a six-pack of good craft beer for like $10. I think that's a good deal, and it's good stuff, so that might last me two nights. But so, you know, why do you guys care so much about these type of heritage breweries that are just, I don't know, I'm not sold on it. So,
all right, well, first of all,
well, if I can just break in a second, one of the things is that you know, that we tend to stumble over are these definitions, and Narragansett is a great example of what, you know, where we stumble. Narragansett is actually just an old brand name. At least there is no Narragansett brewery anymore. Ironically, it's being brewed last I heard, it's being brewed in Rochester at the Genesee plant, which is an old plant that goes back to the 1800s. So is Narragansett a heritage brewery? I don't know, and I really don't care, because I think those cans of Narragansett are quite good. I've really grooved into their Oktoberfest, and they make a couple other, you know, nice Bock and so on. And to me, you know, that's what really matters, is what's inside that can of beer.
No, it's true, but I mean, why are you focusing on those instead of all the other great little small new breweries that are coming up? And you know, you guys are in Philly Beer Week alone. There's so many great Pennsylvania breweries. You know, why are you thinking about those beers instead of like all the new ones?
Well, me personally, I think about all beer. I don't focus on any one particular brand at all. I pretty much drink anybody that's good.
No, and I want you to talk about this, and I'm just trying to get into it because it's eye opening. You know, we've like I said, there's craft breweries and, you know, macros, and there's been a war. You know, and then, you know, in the 80s, everybody's talking about how the large breweries are trying to shut down the nascent craft movement. So we talked to all these people, and I think maybe you should rate these breweries. How about that? I mean, let's just bring in Will, because Will does this show. You're talking about the bottom shelf beers.
Should we score them out of 10?
Yeah, you guys score out of 10.
Let
Martin and James take over. Which ones would you actually buy, and which ones wouldn't you buy? How about that? That's what I would say.
I love the Narragansett. Mainly because it was in my favorite film of all time, Jaws. I'll find it for $5, but I'll catch it and kill it for $10. And it's even better with a Scottish accent.
Well, the accent helps Will. It.
So, Don, Dixie Brewing, score out of 10, please.
Well, Dixie, you know, I go back and forth on that. First of all, is it even being... we don't see it much in the Philadelphia area because I think they had some issues after the big hurricane. So I'm not really sure.
So it's rare, so we should give it at least a 6.
Is it even being brewed at this point or what?
I don't know. I thought you were the expert in these things. Don't ask us. We're from Scotland, mate.
Well, there's a list of heritage beers that I have here. I thought that was yours. It says heritage breweries in the United States. And it's maybe it's from our research guy. But there's Iron City. There's Genesee, Utica Club. So did you not have a list of heritage breweries?
It might have been Rachel. She's yeah. awesome in Google.
Don't believe Google.
So, Don, tell us a couple more. So you're Joe Sixpack, and I know you write about all kinds of things. So what are some of the trends that you're seeing in the Philly area for beer, besides heritage beers? So,
well, I mean, I would say that we're seeing pretty much the same thing we're seeing everywhere else in the U.S. I think the biggest story in craft beer right now is the continued explosion, almost like – craft beer is getting a third or fourth wind. We're seeing new breweries open up practically monthly around the city as the rest of the country. And for me personally, as a beer writer, it's completely impossible to keep up with all the new beers that are coming on the market. And I think that that's putting, you know, it's putting a lot of pressure on beer stores to keep current with beers. And I'm not really sure how it's playing out. All I can say is that I'm really digging it because, you know, there's never been a better time to drink so many good beers. So what's happening in Philly, I think, is reflective of what's happening in the rest of the country.
And if you had to rate Sly Fox out of 10, how would you score them?
Well, I love Sly Fox. I mean, I don't rate beer breweries on any kind of scale like that, but I think that Sly Fox is making some really fine beers in cans. They make, you know, I think one of the best Oktoberfest beers in America right now. And I also think that some of their big bottled beers are quite good as too.
We like them a lot too.
Saison all summer.
You know, on the way in, Don, Sam Barbieri was talking about he really likes the Sly Fox Grisette. It's the seasonal saison. I'm a big fan of
great summer beer.
Pikeland Pils. You know, we had a lot this summer. It's like toasty. It's not too hoppy. There's a lot of great breweries, and you know, why don't you stay on, Don? We're gonna get off the subject of heritage breweries because I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about Bud and bottom shelf beers. I really don't. And I'm sorry, Will. I want to talk about the beers that we like, but we're going to come back. We'll take a short break. Will you stay on with us? We're going to come back. We're going to talk to the BrewDog guys, and we're really going to. And Sam Barry brought some of his vintage beers. He's got one of the best vintage beer sellers in New York. So here we are on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes. All right.
Cheers, man.
No, it doesn't matter, but.
You're listening to Burgundy by the Hollows. Stay tuned for more Beer Sessions Radio, everybody.
My lover's hands were burgundy when last she came.
Come back, we'll talk about it, right? Let's come back. You guys don't want to listen?
We can hear.
You can hear everything?
Yeah.
We've got ears.
Good ears. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick. We're going to have a great dinner tonight. Beyond Pizza, there's specials and some fancy tasting menus, too. So we're going to rock it out. We got the guys from BrewDog in Scotland, woo! Sam Barbieri from Waterfront Ale House, Will Gordon from Boston, and Don Russell, Joe Sixpack. Are you still on the air?
I am still with you.
All right, now we're going there. So, Will, we were kind of ragging about why are we talking about heritage beers and all this stuff. Will, what were you going to say?
What I was going to say is that I understand that Corey and I, my buddy here, my manager who came down with me, we drank Alchemist Heady Topper on the bus down here this morning at 7 o'clock because it came straight out of my fridge, and I didn't want to get warm, so we had to drink it at 7 o'clock in the morning on the bus. My wife's listening. She's not thrilled, but what are you going to do? And
at least you weren't driving.
Right. And no, that's not as no Narragansett's not as good as that. None of these heritage beers are as good as that. I don't have any pretensions or mistake that, but I think there's context to beer and to food and to everything. So there's certain beer maybe that you'll drink that will remind you of your granddad, and that is worth something. And I was thinking every July 29th, that's my father's birthday. He's not with us anymore. I drink Miller Lights on that day. and on Miller Lite on my dad's birthday is the best tasting beer in the world. And my kid's going to be lucky, because my favorite beer is Allagash Curio. So they're going to get to drink that on my birthday. But, you know, so I think context.
What about Corey?
Jimmy.
So Corey's your manager. Corey, you came all this way.
Came all the way down on the bus. You know, we got down here safe. It was great to meet the guys from BrewDog finally. I spent some time in Scotland, and I know that if you guys bow down the same way Will does, Tennis Lager and Belhaven's Best has to be something that's been built through your heritage. You know, it's something that
it's true. But let me tell you about you guys. It's Corey and Will. I know you guys wrote some things. You wrote some things for Serious Eats, Will. But so what are you guys doing now? I think I missed something.
Well, Corey and I, we're not lovers, although our wives suspect it. But
I was unsure when you came in as well.
Yes, yeah, as you would be. No, we work.
He's got Corey has the Barry White voice.
Right. We've worked in the same bars.
He doesn't even need a microphone.
We're just neighborhood buddies and stuff, and we appreciate. So, like, on a good day, we'll get together with the wives and the girlfriends, and we'll drink the best beers that we can and everything. But sometimes, on a hot summer day, starts at about 10:30 in the morning, you want about a 4.5% ABV. You want to just play wiffle ball in the backyard.
I'm a big fan of session beers anyways. But what do you guys do? I don't understand. So you're a writer, but
I'm a bartender in a craft beer bar in Boston.
So you're a man?
I work at a fine dining restaurant in Boston. I shuck oysters for a living.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We have a wonderful heritage in Boston as well. As you know, you listed off the heritage beers earlier. We didn't mention the ones that are coming out of there now. Jack's Abbey out of Framingham, Massachusetts. Cape Ann Brewing Company out of Gloucester, Massachusetts. All doing stuff that's, essentially lager-based. That's a wonderful offering from the Northeast.
But they're craft breweries, too. So, you know, it's a good... I actually like the name Heritage Brewery better than craft brewery. I mean, right? I mean, what do you guys think? Is it time for a new name for the beers we like? I mean,
for me, the name that you give the beers that you like doesn't matter at all. If it's good beer, if you like it, if you're happy when you enjoy it, who gives a fuck what you call it? It's awesome.
Watch your mouth.
Sorry, Rachel said we could swear.
Anyway, so do you work at a bar too, or are you just a writer?
Well, I'm on and off at a couple of bars, depending on how the writing's going, depending on when the rent's due.
So which of the bars in Brooklyn do you work? I mean, in Boston, do you work at?
We work at the People's Republic, Corey and I, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And it's a good bar, but it's not a craft beer bar per se. But we got Long Trail. You know, we have some Vermont locals, and you know,
I'm going to make a confession. I mean, one reason I get to like indulge in the craft beer lifestyle and drink all the fancy beers is that I whether own or work at a craft beer bar. And I know that, I mean, I've talked about this a lot. If I did, I would have to be at the mercy of going to many bars where, how much do I want to pay for beer? But also, usually they don't have the beers that I want. Mm-hmm. And I pick something else, like, you know, something cheap or booze, or I have to go to a retail shop. So our perspective, usually on the show, and Sam will back me up, is that's one reason we're in the game, is that we are at craft beer bars. And when we drink beer, that's what we think of. And other than that, I don't drink beer. So for me, I don't go to a bar and drink a beer if they don't have good craft beer. I would just drink wine or a cocktail. And I think that's what we're up against as an industry, is that I feel like that more bars need to up their game. And I don't think there's no reason why every bar or restaurant in the country can't have a couple, you know, good craft beers. And even go to like DC, there's hotels that have a full lineup of craft beer. I think it's what people want. So I feel like if you're not serving it, you're kind of behind the eight ball. And you can put up a bunch of beers in front of people, and if they have a chance to try a good craft beer, you know, I want a beer that when Brooklyn Brewery started, I know Steve Handy told me, he said, you know, we want to make a beer that you can drink four of. Well, that was a long time ago, but I want a beer that I can drink like 10 of. But it doesn't have to be session. It's just that I want to crave it so much, and that's why you drank the Heady Topper. Mm-hmm. We drink Peekskill Eastern Standard IPA every time we come to Roberta's. But to me, that's what beer is about. It's like, I grew up drinking wine, really good wine. So I want something that makes me want to come back as much as a good bottle of wine does. I don't necessarily care if it's beer or liquor or something. And that's what I like about craft beer, and that's why we do the show. I mean, you go to a place like Sam's at Waterfront Ale House. I mean, let's taste some of the beers that he brought, because he has one of the deepest cellars of vintage beers in America, and you wouldn't even know it. And what do you have, Sam? You got Sammy Klaus from when it was made in Switzerland.
I have Sammy Klaus from 97. I have Rogue Old Crustacean from 93.
Before I was born.
Yeah, let's let these boys, I think if you're going to do the show here, let's tap our
if
expert.
If you were my son, it would have been in your baby bottle.
Like your son. Let's tap. Which
so
one,
I'll tell you, though,
which one are you
you're
tap?
Saying Come you want to drink 10 beers a lot of times, but I like to have a really good, well-made, rich beer because I could be satisfied with two of those beers instead of having to have 10 of them. Yes, there's times that I do like to catch a nice buzz, but there's times I want to be satisfied as well, and two really tremendous beers are going to satisfy me, especially with really good food. It's the same way, you know, if you buy a piece of pork at a Pathmark, or if you get a beautiful piece of pork from a real farm upstate at the farmer's market, you don't need 10 ounces. You need 3 ounces and to be just as satisfied.
And I didn't think that I would have to have this conversation on this show, but I think that when I go out there outside of you know, our comfort zone, I realize that still most people aren't getting the really good beers. And, you know, honestly, I'll tell you about personal health. You know, they talk about beer bellies. We can have this conversation. Part of it is that when you're drinking an industrially produced beer, you're drinking like CO2 is carbonated crap. And at the end of the day, it's like your stomach hurts. But when you're drinking craft beer with a natural fermentation, you know, it's a different process. And, you know, for me, craft beer is like food. It's important to drink the best stuff. And I don't think you have to spend a lot of money to drink it. You know, I don't think you have to chase down the rarities that, you know, are on eBay or something. But I think that, you know, going and getting a locally produced, a small, you know, brewery. Wow, I can't believe I'm having this conversation. But, you know that we're living the fight because craft beer is... I mean, you guys must see this, too. You're going around the country, and whatever people say, still, most people don't have access to really good craft beer.
I mean, that's part of the program is that James and myself... on the BrewDog show, wanted to convert as many craft beer virgins as possible. And it's that, just getting that one gateway moment where someone who's drank a generic beer their whole life gets that one hit of flavor that they didn't know existed in beer.
It's pretty. And craft beer virgins.
And
wow.
one other point. if you're worried about your waistline, we could get Don's six-pack to maybe give us some fitness tips.
When do we get to see the six-pack?
Yes, I had the six-pack to prove it. That's true. Actually, as I've pointed out before, people don't drink beer to lose weight. Okay, that's we drink beer for other reasons, but not to lose weight.
And I know you cover a lot of things, Don, and as Joe Sixpack. I mean, we're just happy to have this conversation with you. And I know we're going to talk to you more. Do you have any questions for the guys from BrewDog? I mean, I'm sure you've had some of their beers. They're a phenomenon unto themselves, aren't they?
I caught up to them when they were down here in Philly. They were doing some filming at one of the local brew pubs here. And I waited, and then I got tired of waiting, so I left. But I wish I had grabbed them at Earth Bread and Brewery.
Yeah, I mean, when we were in Philly, we brewed a beer with Victory Brewing, and we made the most American beer ever on the 4th of July.
What beer was that?
Well, how would you make the most American beer ever?
I don't know. The most American beer was made in, 1620 with honey and pilgrims.
You're very good at this.
See? Right, Don? I mean, that's the good West, or it might be a cider. It's probably a rum. I mean...
Exactly.
Yeah, so most American, you guys think, there's such a great history in America before Prohibition, so...
Well, we actually put the history of America in the beer. So we had 320 million copies of the Declaration of Independence encoded onto DNA, and we used that in brewing the beer. So as you drank the beer, you were actually... confusing yourself with a
many
liquid history
of the
America.
Many of the early pioneer settlers in America were from Scotland. I mean, so you go to places like North Carolina, anywhere there was like rugged people that made a difference, they were all Scots. Did you know that?
But they distilled. They didn't.
We kind of like to think we're a bit like Dick Whittington. In 1665, Dick Whittington left Scotland. He had a stick. On the end of a stick, he had some of his clothes, and then he had a cat, and he walked down to London, and we were doing the same, but in America, without the cat, because Martin's allergic to them.
Well, Donna, I didn't even know that Scots made beer. I mean, we've heard about breweries in Scotland that They make beer so that they can season the cask, or they can distill it into whiskey. But is there really a tradition of good beer in Scotland?
Not so much. And what we want to do, most people in Scotland think beer is something you go out and drink 8 pints of something with no taste, no flavour. You fall over, you have a kebab, you wake up with a hangover, and you tick Saturday night off your to-do list. What we want to do is we want to elevate the status of beer. We want to put the taste, the flavour, the passion back into people's beer glasses and open their eyes to this spectrum of stylistic diversity, of artisan craftsmanship that they never knew existed.
All right. And, Will, you want to give these guys a challenge? Why don't we start asking some of these craft breweries to make an affordable session beer?
Well, I wouldn't even worry about affordability as much, because it's not so much about the money. I know, Jimmy, earlier you said, oh, for $10 I can get a craft beer six-pack that'll last me 2 nights, and that's complete bullshit. It will last you 45 minutes, so don't bullshit me.
True.
But I know what you mean. It's not necessarily the money, but just...
I steal the beer from work.
Right.
That's for real.
But, just sessionability is something that I'm interested in, is being able to get a... So you guys have, a nice, under 5.5, under 5?
Perfect beer for you called Dead Pony Club.
Yeah, it's.
Have you tried that?
You got it, Sam?
Yes, I have. That's what I would drink on a. I would drink that on a warm, sunny day when my sand is under my toes.
So it's under.
Excellent.
Under 4%.
Ice cold, though. That's the only thing I say. Most beers I don't like ice cold, but that beer I could drink when it's really 90 degrees and just put it down.
Martin, tell me about it.
Yeah, so I mean, under 4%, but uses some of the best American hops ever. So Citra, Mosaic, and Simcoe, all three of those in there, and it's tremendous. You know, you can drink a lot of it. I usually do at work.
so I've heard.
But it's, you know, it's the complete beer, so it's got everything I want in a beer of that style. So it's got a huge dry hop character. It's got a decent bitterness there as well, but then... It's a beer that you can drink quite a lot of without having to call your mum to give you a lift home.
She's tired of that.
One more
brew
beer.
Very, very well balanced. It's excellent beer.
So if I go out in Brooklyn tonight, you know, what's a brew dog that I might see in a good beer bar?
Cool. Well, one of the beers that we've created a huge amount of fuss with is Tokyo. Tokyo is an 18.2% imperial stout made with jasmine and cranberries, and we age it on toasted vanilla oak chips, so huge, decadent, indulgent, opulent, capsulating in a beer that just kind of offers new tastes and nuances with every sip.
So we're actually going over time, but I want to ask this question. This is what I've been waiting to ask you guys all night.
I love you too.
Like the Tokyo, and some of the other beers that you've made have been on the stronger side. Why have you chosen to make beers like that?
Well, we're on a mission to challenge people's perceptions about what beer it is, how it can taste, how it can be enjoyed. Beer's been made now for almost 10,000 years. In the last couple of years, we made the strongest beers on the planet, and it's just to get people, especially in the UK, thinking about beer in a different way, and hopefully to help us achieve the goal of elevating the status of beer.
It's also a great challenge to actually try and brew that.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for coming on. We're looking forward to seeing your show next week.
The show is on the new Esquire Network. It premieres on the 24th of September at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. 10 o'clock Eastern Time? 9 o'clock. You should know that. It's sometime. Check it in Google.
It's on TV.
Esquire Network. Watch it, or we won't speak to you.
And Will, tell us what you got coming up next. Any
what I'm mostly doing is going to watch the show at either 9 or 10 o'clock Eastern on the 21st. And if you don't watch it, I won't speak to you.
And Sam, we got Atlantic Antic, September 29th.
Yes, sir.
Don, anything going on in Philly that we should know about?
It's Oktoberfest season. There's at least 3 or 4 large-scale festivals in the city this weekend and next weekend. So, we love our lager down here, so it's going to be a good time for drinking outdoors.
We love it, too, and we're going to talk to you more. I know that you've got a lot to talk about, and we love Philly and Philly Beer Week. Also, give a shout-out to the Bearded Ladies. They're doing an event in Brooklyn, Sisters in Craft, a ladies' pint night. September 22nd. I'll be up in Hudson Valley this weekend at Ossining, New York. There's a large kind of river fest. We've got 6 breweries, including Peekskill and Defiant, and we'll be there with right on the Hudson River. We've been part of this HudsonRising.com. Talk about the most beautiful place in the world. It's Lower Hudson Valley, and you've got to check it out, and we've been trying to promote it all summer.
And the Peekskill IPA was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, we love them. We love Peekskill.
Very
and
good.
It's,
very good.
It's the truth. I saw a picture of Jeff O'Neill. He was out in the hop farm, lining a pile of hops. He really is our new star brewer in New York, and we're just looking forward to more good beer in New York. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thank you again. Thanks so much. Always follow us on Twitter at @beer_sessions. You can get Maggie's updates every week. And thanks to Sam, Will, James, Martin, Rachel, Don, and Corey. Is that Corey, right? For joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah.
Good night, and God bless America.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.